Welcome to the Life Over Coffee podcast, conversations for transformation.
The goal of parenting is to rear a child to adulthood as a man or a woman living under God's authority. The hope-filled goal is for your child to step out into God's world that final time as they exit your home. The empty nest time has begun. And you want that child to step out as a person under God's authority. The transition from when they once submitted and obeyed to you, now they desire to submit to and obey God as an adult operating as a missional agent in God's world. This process of training a child to that future aspiration happens in three stages, and I want to break those three stages down for you. The first stage is the dependent stage. The second one is the interdependent stage. I'll get into the minutiae of these stages in just a moment. And the final one is the independent stage. Now, the rule of thumb, the breakdown for these stages are in years, and it's arbitrary, of course, depending on your child. But the dependent stage is from 0 to 2 years of age. The interdependent stage is from 2 to 22 years of age, typically when a child goes to college and they graduate and they step into the third stage, which is the independent stage, and that is from 22 years of age until death. Now, each stage is a window of time, and it does flex depending on the child, the parents, the situations that influence a child's maturation through each stage. For example, some children will be independent long before their 22nd birthday, and then there will be others that will live with their parents long after 22 years. Now, I would say that by the time you're 35 years of age, you need to come out of the basement and stop being on TikTok. But there is some flexibility within these stages. And so what I just shared with you with these three stages, they are suggestive, not binary. And also the word independent, this final stage, the independent stage. When I use the word independent, I'm talking about in a limited sense, speaking only to a person's ability to function well in the culture while providing a means of sustenance. Self-reliance is a non-communicable attribute that belongs to God and God alone. God did not communicate, or He did not give that attribute to us. We are not self-reliant people. And I know sometimes we might think that we're self-reliant and even say, hey, that person is so self-reliant. Well, it's not true. It's an illusion at worst. Or you could be speaking in a self-limiting way where they are providing for themselves and they are doing things without the help of others. I mean, not even Jesus was self-reliant. And so the typical starting time for their limited independence, if I could modify it that way, that is when a child graduates from college. Hence, that's why I have the 22-year line for that transition from interdependence to independence. All right, so the dependent stage from birth to the 2-year mark. A child is completely dependent on his parents or his guardian. An infant can do little to take care of himself. They are not that bright. They don't understand their world. They don't know how to feed themselves or clothe themselves or do all the other things that they will inevitably do as they step out that last time as a man or a woman under God's authority, living independently in His world. And so these early years, the dependent stage, early mobility begins. He doesn't have the mental or physical capacity to live alone, and you don't want him to live alone. And by the time a child is 2 years old, his ambition to explore the world around him surpasses his mental and physical capacities to keep up with his desires, meaning his eyes are much bigger than what his body and mind can actually accomplish. It is the combination of limited intelligence and ever-increasing independence when they converge, and it creates this stage of life that some parents call the terrible twos, which, in my view, is a terrible name. That is not something that we use with our children when they hit the 2-year mark or got in that season of time, that seasonal window where they were exploring omnipotence. This stage is not terrible at all. It's actually an opportunity for a parent to bring shape to a small soul that knows no bounds and will run wild all over you if the parents permit. And so the parent's goal is to provide the structure because they want the child to learn many character traits, attributes like obedience, for example. And of course, the goal is to, like a time release capsule, you begin to release them into the world. You're letting up on the structure as they continue to mature. But in this early stage of the dependent years, they need your structure. They need you stepping in and letting them know that these are the parameters. Here is the fence, and you cannot go. You must not go past what we have set up. And so this age is one of the most amazing times in a child's life. He begins to learn those valuable character traits that will shape his heart for the rest of his life. Let me give you just a short list of some of the things that you want to place in his heart to teach him at this early pliable stage. Humility, honor, integrity, submission, of course, obedience, honesty, discretion, love, serving, and of course, self-control. These are just a few of the character seeds that a parent begins to seed in the child's heart. And maybe you can think of it just like that, a square foot garden where you have the structure built. And inside that structure, you seed these character traits, a few that I've listed and many more. Structure and compliance are the most essential things at this early age. And if done well, these seeds will manifest as good fruit in a young person's life. Now, of course, even as I say these things, I'm not discounting the grace of God, which transcends all of our efforts. I am speaking exclusively to the role of a parent, to plant, to water, while trusting God to bring that future growth. A 2-year-old's boundless energy and capacity to learn provide the proactive parent with a pliable student for learning in every context and situation in his life. And so you want to step into that square foot garden and you want to seed these character traits early on, trusting that God will provide a fruitful harvest sometime in the child's future. And then as they head into the independent stage, this is the first transition. There are two critical times in a child's life. The 2-year-old mark as they're moving from dependent to interdependent. And then, of course, the time of 10, 11, 12 years of age as they're stepping out of childhood into young adulthood. And that all happens inside this second stage, the interdependent stage. And so as the child migrates out of the dependent stage, the parent works at redrawing and expanding the lines of responsibility between what the child should be doing and what the parent should be doing. And so you're taking your square foot gardening and you are expanding the structure, the boards that keep it all together, because the child is growing, maturing, and able to do more things than he could during the dependent season. And so the child's growing capacities enable him to take on new and increasing responsibilities, which he is always eager to accept. Let me do it, as our little children would say. They want to do it on their own. They're kicking against the walls. They want to be independent. And of course, this is where the parent has to step in and be obedient. Because truly, to be a permissive parent and not drawing those structural lines, that is disobedience on the parent's part. And so the lines of redrawing, expansion, that process continues to evolve throughout the child's young life. The child is malleable and the stage is fluid. The parent operates in the Spirit, walking in the Spirit, always adjusting according to the progressive changes in the child. The objective is always to shift the responsibilities away from the parent. while giving them to the child. You don't want to be washing the child's clothes forever or the child's dishes or picking up after the child. No, that stage, it goes with the dependent years, and the child learns these responsibilities among many other things. Like a time-released capsule, the parent is incrementally releasing the child into God's world to step into the independent stage as a man or a woman under God's authority. Nearly all of the heavy parental lifting happens before the child is 12 years of age. The first decade of a child's life is cement setting. The habits, the shaping influences, the habituations that they live out pretty much for the rest of their lives, well, they happen within the first decade. The teenage years are more about affirming the good things that the child is doing, those attributes that are now little seedlings and they are growing up. Or perhaps the teenage years is adjusting the parental work that the parents parented into the child during the previous decade. Like slow-setting cement, the teenage years are when the child becomes mostly set in his ways. His manner of living is in place as he experiences an inward and increasing compulsion to do life independently. When the parent comes to the counselor with a rebellious teenager, in almost all cases, it's too late. Now, what I mean by that is too late in the sense that the parent wants the counselor to be part of the change process in that kid's life right now. They want this kid to change. Well, that's not how it works. I do not mean that it's too late and that the grace of God will not intervene in the child's life. But in almost all cases, when and should that grace of God impose itself in that child's life, usually it's 10 or 15 years later when they come to their senses because the cement is set by the time they are in the teenage years, and it will only be the sledgehammer of God that breaks the young adult child's heart, reorienting him to the Lord. Now, the interdependent years reveal the parents' modeling and teaching during the dependent years. So what you have been seeding in this child now comes up into the fruit, and the fruit is the teenage years. Maybe you could think of it this way, that the seed has given life and it is growing up through the sod in the first 10 years or so of the child's life, and you don't see it growing, but it is growing. And then it pops through the earth and you begin to see the fruit. That's what I mean, that the interdependent years reveal what the parents have been doing in the child's life during those first 10 years. Now, please hear me clearly here. I am not suggesting that the parents are at fault, primarily, if they have a rebellious teenager. I'm not saying that at all. I am saying that they will be primary shaping influences in the child's life for good or evil. We can't disconnect cause, or we have to, I'm sorry, it would be better to say we must disconnect cause from contribution. You're not the cause of anybody's sin, including your child, but you can contribute. I talk about this with my own relationship with my father. I am the cause for every sin that I chose to do during my teenage years, for example. But as an alcoholic dad, he was a contributor into where I was, but it would be intellectually dishonest, it would be sinful for me to say that he is the cause of the choices that I made, because that is absolutely not true and unsupported by Scripture. And so I want parents to understand that, yeah, we have a responsibility, but we're not the cause. So there's two ditches that you want to stay out of. One ditch is the ditch of presumption, meaning I can do anything that I want to do and it doesn't matter. No, it does matter. We don't want to presume, take for granted God's grace. We want to cooperate with God as secondary causal agents. The other ditch that we could jump into is saying that it is all my fault, that my child is this way and the weight of all of that rests on my shoulders, and that is untrue as well. And so the first half of the interdependent stage, let's say from 2 years of age to 12, that is the parent's primary work in the child's heart. And the last half of the interdependent stage, let's say from 12 to 22 years, is when the parent motivates the child To continue as they are? Or you try to adjust the broken things that are in the child's life? Now, most of the time, it's a combination of two, because the child has not reached perfection yet at this stage. The child is mostly good and the parent is spurring him on to maturity. Or it could be that the child is mostly disobedient and the parent is looking for reinforcement through intervention, hoping that the child does not walk away from the faith of the parents. Now, if you have a child in this second category where they're mostly bad, mostly disobedient or rebellious, then I would encourage you to get that help. But you need to understand that the cement has set for the most part. And so the sledgehammer of God's grace is going to have to come in. And that could take a while. God regenerated me when I was 25 years old. And so it was long after my teenage years had passed. And sometimes, well, in many cases, that's exactly how it happens. But regeneration is the parent's secret weapon. And it's the parent's only hope for the child's transformation. Everything else that a parent does is just window dressing, or as Jesus talked about in Matthew 23, it's someone who can look good on the outside, but the inside is rotten to the core. Now, I'm not suggesting that you don't do window dressing, that you teach them these good habits, good responsibilities, good character traits. You want to do that with the hope that the person will become born again. The child will eventually become a Christian. And if he is born again at any time during his childhood, the grace of God will transform any bad parental practices or Adamic influences. Redemption is the parent's only genuine safety net. No matter how awful a parent is or how evil the child is, God's grace can gather it all and nail it to the cross of Christ. The birth, the life, the death, the resurrection, the ascension, the intercession of Christ. I'm talking about the gospel here. It can change any child. The best and worst parents are hopeless outside of God's grace-empowered regeneration of the child. This theological and unbending truth is where good and bad parents, however you determine such things, I would want to be careful there about saying this parent's good and that one's bad. But nevertheless, for quick and easy categories, both good and bad parents must guard their hearts, because a legalistic parent will think that they made the child bad because of their personal failures. There's a different type of legalistic parent who may think that they made their child good because of their righteous deeds, their good parenting. Both of them err. It's not about the parenting. It's about the grace of God in a child's life. Parenting can be an asset or a liability, no doubt. I'm not jumping in the ditch of presumption and saying that it just doesn't matter. You can parent any way you want to. I'm not. A parenting can be an asset. And a parent can be a liability. The critical matter is that every parent must anchor their hope in the transformation that God provides by grace, that child will turn out well by grace. And so let's say that your child completes college and is back at home, which is not necessarily wrong, by the way. There does not have to be any shame in living with your parents. Lucia lived with her parents until she married me when she was almost 28 years old. She thought about living on her own for a while, but she chose not to do that. And there were several compelling reasons. One, she had a great relationship with her parents. She had no interest and saw no particular benefit in living on her own. She worked full time and was fully providing for herself. She was mostly independent. She gave her parents a modest monthly rent payment as though she was living on her own. She saved her extra money for marriage. Now, I just want to say praise God there. I will not tell you the amount, but it was a huge blessing when we started our marriage. Even a bigger blessing as we realized what we were stepping into years later, going into full-time ministry. So she extended and enjoyed her relationship with her parents, which she knew would considerably diminish after she stepped up and into her autonomous domestic empire, meaning when she became married. She benefited from the best of both worlds, being with her parents while living independently in God's world prior to getting married. Now, there are no biblical mandates regarding adult children living with their parents. Each circumstance and context, it stands on its own merit. As the parent and child determine the most practical benefit and God-glorifying solution. Knowing the season is transitional, it will not last forever, or it should not last forever. If you have an adult child living at home, then I want to give you three suggestive tips for your consideration as you come alongside this child to help them to launch into God's world as a man or a woman under His authority, living independently or limited independence, as I have outlined. Here are three tips. Number one, observe his practice. And I'm using the pronoun his here, but of course that means the implication is it means her as well. But observe their practice. What you see in your child is what your child has become. Whether good or bad, what he is today is what he will be should he marry. His practice is his pattern, and it's important that we understand that. You must have an accurate understanding of who he is. All parents should practice as much as they possibly can objective discernment of their children. Now, none of us are objective in any case with any situation. No facts are neutral, and we always upload our interpretation to whatever fact that we are observing. And when we see our children, we are obviously not objective, but we want to practice objective discernment as much as we possibly can. People do not change at the marriage altar. His practice is his pattern. People continue to be who they have been. When they get married, in that 5-second transition from I now pronounce you man and wife, what he was, what she was before is what he or she will be 5 minutes after that. Nothing's going to change when they get married. And whether the child is 2 or 12 or 22, it is important to discern your child so that you can help them to become more like Jesus. His future bride will praise you if you have the insight to perceive how he is, and then you have the courage to speak into his life. As long as he's in your home, your goal is to help him to become more like Jesus. And so tip number one, observe his practice. Number two, assess his maturity. And so as you are observing his practice, you want to assess his maturation level. If the Lord gives you a few more years to help your child mature, then that is a bonus. It would be marvelous if all children married after they were mature enough to marry, but that is not always the case. In fact, I would say it would be an outlier to say that both people who marry are mature. A solid working definition of biblical maturity, just to give it a context, is to be like Jesus. That's what maturity looks like. And after all of these years, I have a ways to go as well, and I've been married for a long time. If you want to know two sound and practical templates for what Jesus is like, then I would encourage you to check out Galatians 5. You understand that as the fruit of the Spirit. We see 9 aspects of the fruit of the Spirit. And of course, Jesus emulated all 9 of those perfectly. And so the fruit of the Spirit gives you a good working template of what biblical maturity is like. Also, in 1 Corinthians 13, verses 4 through 7, we call this the love chapter. And there too is a template of what maturity looks like. It looks like Christ. If your child is increasingly approximating the character traits in just these two passages, Galatians 5, 1 Corinthians 13, then you should feel pretty great about releasing them into the culture as a man or a woman who can live well under God's authority. And so for those kids who are living in the home after, let's say, they graduate college, number one, observe their practice. Number two, assess their maturity, compare it to Galatians 5, 1 Corinthians 13. And then tip number three, measure their autonomy. Whatever years you have left with him should be spent guiding him out of the nest. You do this by observing his practices while motivating him to a maturity that looks like Jesus per the two templates that I outlined above. When he can be Christ-like while living autonomously in God's world, then your job is done, if it ever is done. This kind of child will not need your ongoing surveillance and intervention and wisdom, counsel, advice, because he knows how to walk humbly with Jesus. I'm assuming that he will permit you to speak into his life while realizing that many children are not that humble or not that self-aware to ask for spiritual guidance. And so I am presenting to you a picture that the Bible would appeal to us to all be and to become, seeking advice, like say from our parents, wise counsel. But I'm also recognizing that this idealistic picture is not true for many people, because the children will not be humble enough, self-aware enough, mature enough, courageous enough to seek that kind of advice. However, if they're in your home, I would encourage you to think about these three things. Observe their practice, assess their maturity, and then measure their autonomy. Practice, maturity, autonomy, they provide a framework for thinking about your ongoing shepherding of your adult child's heart. And as you implement these three concepts, your goal for him is to leave the nest. You are rearing them to leave. And unless there are prohibiting circumstances, you want to release him into God's world. And so I want to give you three final tips that I trust will serve you well as you equip your child for the rest of his life. The first one is responsibility. By this time, and I'm talking about children that are at the tail end of the interdependent stage, or maybe their experience that they're living in limited independence and maybe inside the home, and you want to continue to guide them as much as they will let you and much as you can. And one of those things is responsibility. He should have gainful employment. You want him to be responsible. It's an excellent opportunity for him to practice living on his own, though he may be in the interdependent stage. One of the benefits of being in the home is that the parents can be ad hoc life coaches. I would have loved to have had my parents who could release me into the world while continuing to tether me to their wisdom and care. That was not my story, and it's fine. God's grace transcends whatever our circumstances may be. I became a survivalist early on. I was tossed in the pond of life, and I was asked to sink or swim, and I learned how to swim, and I became a self-reliant survivalist. Now, that in itself has its own baggage. But I recommend that if you don't have parents that can offer you the wisdom that you need, teaching you such things as responsibility, that you find your Paul. Every Timothy needs a Paul. Paul was a mentor of Timothy. One of the ways that you can help your child learn how to live well in God's world is for him to have ever-increasing responsibilities, whether you are doing it as a parent or he has a Paul that is teaching him to be a responsible young adult. Think through how to grow his to-do list. Think about what he should be doing as a 45-year-old man or woman, maybe a man with a wife and children, and then plot a plan to help him to get there. But responsibility would be one of the key things that you would want to mentor into him. Number two is rules. We can't live without rules, and neither can he. Those ever-expanding walls that I talked about in the dependent stage, they're always there. You may have more room to roam. You may have a larger playground to play in, but there's always rules. There's always walls. There's always structure. There has to be. There are rules for driving, rules for buying, rules for working, rules for relaxing. Structure and standards are good concepts that teach us how to function well. Without the reinforcing structure of rules, they would be chaos, and we see that in our culture today. We don't want to live like that. We can do better as parents, teaching our children about the goodness of rules. If your adult child lives with you, one of the most loving things you can do is clarify the rules in your home. It is your home, not his. Just like it is God's world, not his. He needs to learn how to live as a man under authority. First, he lives under your authority, and then he matures to where he desires to live under God's authority. If he humbly obeys and follows your leadership, life will be good for him. If he does not, then it is your job to impose the appropriate consequences for any misbehavior. Because if you don't, it will not be a soft landing when he becomes an adult and recognizes that there are rules for living in God's world, and they will be implemented, and it could be harsh, especially if you've never experienced the goodness and kindness of authority, obedience, rules, and structure. So you want to teach him responsibility, you want to teach him rules, and then finally, number three, guard. One of your strongest temptations will be to become his mini Messiah. You cannot change your child. Over worrying about his lack of change or trying to manipulate his life, it will not work in the way that you might hope. Typically, there are two ways that parents become mini messiahs. First, the parent will not correct or not discipline the child because they want to protect him from pain. They see that if I don't want him to have pain in my life, so therefore I'm not going to discipline him. I'm not going to correct him. Do you see the folly in that kind of thinking? The parent does not understand how their lack of obedience by withholding discipline perpetuates the child's lack of compliance, which means this child is going to get in more and more trouble, and so the inevitable is going to happen. You withhold punishment, you withhold correction, you withhold discipline because you don't want to hurt the child. Well, you're going to hurt the child eventually, because he has no boundaries whatsoever. Secondly, there's the parent that will not release the child into the culture. They overprotect him, trying to guard him from dumb mistakes and harsh consequences. Sometimes it is the Lord's discipline working through the silly errors that bring us to our senses, and sometimes children need to experience the consequences of their sin. And so number three, guard your heart, that you don't try to create every possible soft landing in the child's life because it may not be God's will. Marriage and parenting are two of the hardest things that a person will ever do. To do them well, you must do them with the Lord. And so I will leave you with the best parenting advice that you will ever receive. And I read this in Paul Miller's book, A Praying Life. Pray often for your child. Our best hope is in the transforming gospel. Only the regenerated soul is truly safe in this world and the world to come, and so you pray to that end. Part of what I shared with you is a resource that we have at lifeovercoffee.com. It is a free downloadable book. I want you to have a copy of it. This is one chapter that I just shared with you from that book. It is called The Talk, Preparing Your Child for the Sex Talk When That Time Comes at 10, 11, 12 years of age. But this book walks through the preliminary steps and the philosophy of parenting and how to set up a home long before you ever get to the talk. But the talk also has the practical steps to walk through when you come to that brief season, a couple of days in the child's life where you have the sex talk with him or her. But the sex talk, again, there's a long runway that you want to create to when you eventually have that talk. And this book walks you through that process. If you know young parents who have young children, then I would encourage you to let them know about this digital download and they get this book. This would be a wonderful resource for them to have, especially on the front end, especially if their children are toddlers. But even if they're not, I would encourage you to get the book, to read, to learn. Maybe the role that you have in your life now is mentoring other couples who have children because you're living in the empty nest stage. This book will be a huge benefit for you, and it is free. And so go to our store at lifeovercoffee.com, and you can download that book. And of course, we have many others over there that are free to you. I want you to enjoy, benefit from them, and then also share those with your friends. Lastly, if you're able to invest in our ministry, our resources are actually not free. Nothing is free. Everything comes with a cost. Even the gospel has a huge price. It cost our Savior his life. And so nothing truly is free. We can only create these resources and give them away for those who invest in Life Over Coffee. And so if you are at that place to where you can't invest in our ministry, please do so, because we want to keep our resources free so that we can reach as many people as possible with the practical message of Christ. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us. Learn more and get access to other resources at lifeovercoffee.com.